The following presentation was recorded at the 1996 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org. 84.
To be here with you. Heard a great deal about Faith Builders. First time I've gotten here. Been recommended to come by many people for quite a while. And as I drove into to the place here, I thought about the words of Job where he said in the last chapter, "I've heard of thee with the hearing of the ear, but now my eye seeth thee. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes." So whatever preconceptions I had about Faith Builders are now gone and dispelled, and I'm quite eager to experience this day with you. I'm very heartened to see all of the energy and time that's gone into Faith Builders. I've known Milo for a number of years and know that he's put a great deal of time and energy into it, and I'm quite excited to be here. I'm quite also excited to see all of you, because each of you represent many other things that you could be doing, right? I'm sure any of you right now could tell me what else you could be doing. And of course, as Anabaptist people, we've typically not placed a great deal of emphasis on education. And the fact that you're here means that you've taken a little different course in life than perhaps your peers and others have. I'll need to speak up. Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, can I get closer to this thing?
That's not a mic.
That's a mic,
but that's not a speaker.
Okay. So there's no amplification. It's me. All right. I'll do better. Can you hear me in the back?
Yes.
A little bit better. All right. Good. Okay. I should say a little bit about myself and my wife, perhaps. My wife, Lois, is in the back. She had taught school before we got married about 28 years ago, and she took time off to raise our children, and she's back in the classroom about 10 years again. I'm in the classroom starting my eighth year in about 3 weeks. I'll be starting my eighth year of teaching, and it's been a real enjoyable experience. My life has been enriched by it. I was sort of a teacher come lately. I spent my life in farming and fixing things, and when I was 35, I decided to go to college, and got out of college and applied at a Mennonite school, and they hired me, and 2 years later, they made me the administrator, and so that's what I've been doing with my life for the last 8 years here. I've enjoyed it. It's been a real enriching experience to me. I love teenagers. I love students, and I think teaching is fun. I hope you all think that. I'd like to know how many of you are going to be going to classroom first time this fall. Put your hands up. Real. Oh, my goodness. Okay, put your hands down. Now I know how many people are just scared out here. Well, teaching is fun. That's what I'd like to say. I love to teach. And if you know what you're doing up in front of the classroom, it's just a lot of fun. You need to love your students. You need to care about your students. You need to love your material. You need to know your material. And if you do, you'll have a great time. And you'll communicate, and you'll get communication back from students. Well, as I speak to you, I realize I'm speaking to people who some of you are teaching preschool, maybe kindergarten, first grade, all the way up to some of you who are teaching grad school. So we're looking at a very wide range of people here in terms of what you're doing academically. Also, as I think about Mennonite education, which is what Milo asked me to talk about, I think about the wide range of Mennonite education. And I think Milo made a politically judicious move here, because I may be the only one here who's not Mennonite. I'm from the Brethren tradition. So assigning me this topic was a very safe thing, I think, for him. And I think probably that's why I'm the administrator of Terre Hill Mennonite High School, because if I do things that people don't approve of, it doesn't start any church problems, you know. They can just say, well, those Brethren are like that, and everybody else goes on there happily ever after. For those of you who are new teachers, I recall that one time a phys ed teacher told us, relative to sports, and I'm not sure where you're at with sports and phys ed and all that sort of thing, but I would like to give you new teachers some advice. There's 4 points. I have started many of the years that I've taught with these 4 points as chapel. So this comes from a phys ed teacher, but it can be applied to all of life. And this is the way it goes. Number one, join the game. Now, you apply this however you want to. The idea here is don't sit on the sidelines. Join the game. You ever walk up to a game and it was going and you decided it was safer to stand behind a backstop than to get out there and bat because you might strike out? Well, you might strike out. You probably will strike out. But the first point is join the game. Get involved. Get up front there and start doing it. The second point is play by the rules. You know, you can hit a ball real hard, but if you hit it foul, it's not really going to do much good. So the second point is play by the rules. Learn what you need to do to teach school, and then do that. And of course, if you're here, you're well on the way to doing that, if you're a new teacher. The third point is give it your best. Give it all you got. You're going to have to do some sacrificing if you want to be a good school teacher. There are times when your friends are going to want to do things, and you'll have to say no. There are times when it might be more fun to sleep late and you'll have to get up. Might be times when you'd like to go to bed and you'll have to grade papers. You have to make some sacrifices to teach school. You'll probably be making some sort of a financial sacrifice. I certainly did when I started teaching school, and I don't mind little interruptions like that. That's no problem. When you teach school, you'll probably have to make some economic sacrifice. I thought the pay that I was offered to start teaching school was terrible. But I wanted to do it. I believed I should do it. I believed I was called to do it. So I did it. And it's been rewarding. God's met our needs. It's been fine. Give it your best. Give it all you've got. And the fourth point, what do you think it is? Don't quit. The fourth point is don't quit. Everybody strikes out sometimes when you play ball. Everybody falls down, skins their knees. Everybody puts their foot in their mouth sometimes. And so if you're a new teacher, don't quit. I've never started anything that I didn't feel like quitting sometime. Somewhere along the way, I felt like quitting with, I think, everything I've ever started. And so if you're a new teacher, or maybe if you're a seasoned teacher and you're a bit discouraged, I would say my advice to you is don't quit. And when I give this as a chapel, I have the Bible references that go along with it, and I don't have my notes along today, so don't force me to remember all those things right now. Maybe if you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I can find a way to get it to you. So join the game, play by the rules, give it your best, and don't quit. You need to love your students more than you love your material. I find teachers who are, this is all introduction, I hope the introduction doesn't take the whole time here. You need to love your students more than you love your materials. I have seen teachers get very, very frustrated because they love their material more than they love the students. I think I said that wrong the first time. You need to love your students more than you love your material. Now, I hope you love your material. If you're a math teacher, I hope you love math. If you're a chemistry teacher, I hope you love chem. If you're a Bible teacher, I hope you love Bible, and I hope you love that no matter what you teach, because no matter what you teach, you should be integrating Bible into it. The Bible does have the answers for life, and the Bible does speak to issues, and we need to learn how to integrate that. But if you come into the classroom thoroughly prepared and thoroughly saturated with your subject and your material, and you don't focus on the students, it's not going to work. You're going to get frustrated because they won't be relating to you. And if they're not, the material, what do people say? What do they say? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, or something like that. Is that how it goes? Okay. So you need to love your students. And if you do, if you really care for every one of the students, you're willing to take time for them, you'll discover that teaching will be a very rewarding experience. Well, for those of you who are new students here today, those of you who are going to be new teachers, don't, as you're sitting in a class like this or any class, don't miss the content of the class because you're taking notes. I see people taking notes so frantically, and I don't, that's fine, you should be taking notes. But don't miss the lecture, whoever it is, don't miss it because you're taking notes. You know, learn to do some sort of shorthand, and this is not a course in studying. I'm sure that Milo's got those offered also. But if you spend all of your time just writing down every word that the speaker says, you're going to walk out of the session not knowing what happened. But that's my opinion. So my opinion is that if you're a new teacher especially, or if you're trying to copy down notes, rephrase whatever the speaker's saying in your own mind. The way I do it is I listen carefully and I try to rephrase everything that's been said and write it down in my own words. Now, that's my style. You probably have your own style. But my caution is don't miss what's going on because you're trying to write down every word or every syllable that's being said. Make sure you get some sort of shorthand or some way to accumulate the data without absorbing all your energy just taking notes. Also on the sessions that I had today, I would like to say I appreciate your input, and I think as an Anabaptist way of going about things, your input today is just as important as mine. Now, I have a little more responsibility than you do because you can sit there and not say anything if you don't want to. I have a hard time getting away with that, but I would like to know what you're thinking. If I say something wrong, or if I say something that a seasoned teacher here would like to correct, or if I say something a new teacher doesn't understand, please speak up. I'll be eager to hear what you have to say. Also, I'm coming sort of from the perspective of an administrator, so what I say will be colored from that perspective also. And when I asked Milo what I should say today, he said, well, just say something, and I'm not quite sure exactly what he had in mind. So let me share with you, first of all, a Bible verse, Ecclesiastes 9:10 tells us that Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hand finds to do it with your might. Because your life is really pretty short, especially when you get old like me, and you realize that most of your life is now behind you. Your life is short, so use it, invest it, do with it what you know God wants you to do. Okay, an overview of the quality of Mennonite education. I would like to look at it two ways. First of all, I'd like to say some positive things about it. Then I would like to issue some cautions. And after that, I would like to let time for you to respond. Let's see. All right, we'll see how the time goes here. I'm not super time conscious, so we'll see how this works out. First of all, I'd like to say that Mennonite education today is good. It's good because it exists. There was a time when it didn't, really. And without going into the history of it, a fair amount of which I really do not know, I would like to say that Mennonite education is good because it exists. How good is it? Well, it's as good as what we invest in it. This program here is only as good as the time and energy that's going to be invested in it. And the school where you teach is only as good as what you're going to invest in it. The time, the energy, the people, the resources. And schools take an enormous amount of that. They take people behind the scenes, people you never see. How good is it? First of all, it's as good as our homes. Mennonite education is as good as the Mennonite homes that it comes from. And I say parents are a very important part of this process. Research indicates that when parents are involved with the educational process, students learn. When parents are involved with the educational process, students learn. Now, we have to be really careful here that we don't allow, and this is something the home should be responsible for, but sometimes it falls back on us. We have to be careful that we don't allow the homes to default to us as educators. We can't really afford to just let the homes say, well, they're yours for 5 or 6 or 7 hours a day. Now, you teach them all these things. That's the way the public school operates. You understand that? Public schools teach the students academically. They also teach them social skills. They give them their sex education. They give them their breakfast and their lunch. They give them their phys ed. They give them their bodily exercise. They're doing everything. Public schools are the parent of United States society. And we need to be careful that we don't allow Mennonite schools to become the parents of the Mennonite community. Does that make sense? You really should not allow that to happen. And parents in some schools will allow that to happen. Parents in some schools will sort of encourage that to happen. They'll say, well, I can't handle them. Maybe you can do something with them. Okay? No, that's not what it's all about. So we need to be careful. The schools are only going to be as good as the homes. And so the parents need to make sure that the students are coming from strong homes. And I know that that's something you don't have much control over, but we can have control over some of it by not allowing the homes to default to us. If there's a home problem, if there's a parent problem, and right now I'm still dealing with one of those, a home problem that the home tried to slide across the table to the school. And if the school accepts that and doesn't put it back in the home and say, you need to settle this, we can be getting ourselves over our heads real quickly. Well, taking too much time on each issue. How good is Mennonite education? Well, it's going to be as good as the homes from which the students come. Number two, it's going to be as good as the staff. And here, you don't have to write as good as every time. You could just write ditto marks or put as good as and then put your points. As the staff, you folks, okay? You, as you walk into the classroom, I'm going to give you one phrase that I'd like to stick with you today. It is, please write this down, the teacher is the school. The teacher is the school. You got beautiful buildings and new materials and everything and everything and everything, but the teacher is the school. When you're standing in front of your class, that's when school happens. When you are there prepared and the students are there to learn, the teacher is the school. So how good is Mennonite education? It's good, but it's only as good as the staff. It's as good as you are. And I wish here I could talk to administrators. How many administrators are there here today? Okay, good. Some administrators here. Any board members here today? Oh, those are the ones. Where are they, Milo? Okay.
The topic didn't say board members.
Okay. They weren't supposed to come. All right. I think the boards of Christian schools need to be very careful, and of course we can talk about them since they're not here. They should pay us a little bit more, for one, because if they don't, there's no way they can get the kind of staff people they should have. And if they pay us a little bit more, they might be able to keep us a little bit longer. We have too high a turnover of staff in our schools. The turnover of staff is too high. As long as the staff turnover is too high, you're always starting with somebody new, and it's going to be difficult to keep the quality of education where it should be. Okay? So you can go home and tell them I said that. It'd be nice to see more... Don't give them my phone number. It'd be nice to see... Be nice to see more career teachers in Mennonite schools. People who make their life teaching. It'd be nice to see, with all deference to the ladies here, it'd be nice to see more men doing that. And I appreciate all the women who teach school, particularly in Mennonite schools, but it'd be nice to see more men who would be willing to do that. And we're doing a terrific job out there in business. We're doing a terrific job out there in farming. We're doing a terrific job in almost everything. But when it comes to education, we're not, as a community, supporting our staff well enough to keep them there. So it's as good as the staff, and some of that goes back to the school board. It's also only as good as the administration. So if you're an administrator here, the school is not going to rise above your level. The school's not going to be better than you are. I don't think so. It's only as good as the administration. It's really important that we have mature, solid, integrious people in administration. Every year, a couple sad stories hit the gossip lines, right? Where some administrator did something he shouldn't have done. And, you know, destroying somebody's life or being some lack of integrity. We need more good administrators. And administrators need to be level-headed people with hearts as soft as butter and skin as thick as a rhinoceros, so they don't, get pushed around by every little gossip line that comes over the gossip mill. That's important. Administrators also need to be good buffers to the staff. Sometimes I've had teachers who maybe got a call from somebody, or the secretary got a call from somebody, and the teacher's there on the phone crying, or the secretary's crying because the neighbor's upset because somebody kicked a ball in their flower bed or whatever, you know. I think administrators need to take a position there and tell the staff, look, if you have a problem, you don't have to cry about it. Tell them they have to talk to me. You don't have to deal with those problems. Your job here is to teach. So we need administrators who are good, solid people who can say, look, we're not going to allow this to happen. Here's where I stand. Everything stops at my desk and cooperate. Number four, it's only going to be as good as our school boards. School boards are very important. They need to be people who are in touch with the school. They need to be people who are at least occasionally visible. School board members come one night a month and after the lights are out and the students don't even know they exist. The teachers don't know they exist. I would suggest, particularly if you're in administration, talk to your school board and say, hey, if you're driving past the school and you've got your dirty clothes on, don't worry about that. Stop in, walk in, say hi to Miss Martin and, you know, Mr. Stolzfus and whoever's out there. Say hi to them and just peek your head in the door, sit in a class for 3 minutes. You need to encourage them to do that. You'd be surprised, those of us who are familiar with school, who love school, who walk into school and think it's fun, you'd be surprised how many people are absolutely petrified of school. They're scared. Many parents are scared of their teenagers. You know that? Many parents are scared of their grade schoolers. Hopefully not in your schools. Certainly in the world it's true. You know, just observe what goes on in the aisles of a shopping center. And, you know, if you have enough nerve to go to a shopping center. You know, the little children are telling the parents what to do. And I had a father from a conservative Mennonite home within the last year tell me that he's afraid of his son. He won't stand up to his son and say, you can't do this, you're going to do that. We need to be real careful. And school board members many times are sort of afraid of school. And somehow we need to dispel that fear and make them feel welcome. And we've started something at Terry Hill Mennonite High School 2 years ago. This will be our third year. We have made a list of every parent's name, and they've got a visitation day for the school year. We're out of school in June. January 12 might be the day for this family, and we send that home in a newsletter. That's your day to visit school. If you can't visit, change with somebody else who can. And this has, the first year we had very few people do it. Last year we had about 25% participation. And you'll just be surprised how the chemistry of a class can change when Susie or Johnny's mom and dad walk in the back and sit down. You know, everybody notices and everybody pays attention. It also does something to the teachers. You know, it makes teachers pay attention. It makes teachers teach a little better. And so it's good for everybody, and it gets the parents into school, and they don't just think of school as a place where you come and clean the bathrooms, you know, twice a year, but school's a place where you come and see the children really learning something and students having a good time, and boy, it really can change the chemistry of the whole day just to have parents on site for two class periods. So I'd encourage it. It's only going to, school's only going to be as good as the board and the people who stay in touch and at least occasionally are on site. So my overview of the quality of Mennonite education is that it's good because there are good, dedicated people like you, but the truth is you've got your work cut out for you because there are some weaknesses in our education that we really, really should be working on. You get into some of our homes and you'll see some of the literature. You see some homes that have television. You see some of the magazines people are looking at. It's not good. And when you're having to deal with things like that, when you're having to deal with children who come to school and there are problems in the church, there are problems at home, there are family problems, you've got your work cut out for you. And it's a big job. So we have the situations in homes. We have situations in churches. And by the way, I've come to the conclusion that our student, at least the students that I deal with in our community and the schools with which I'm familiar, the students are very highly stressed. They're under more stress than students were when I was a teenager. And I thought we had some stress then. Well, we didn't, compared to stress that some students have today. And I don't know, that's maybe if we want to talk about that, we can bring it up later. Too many of these little detours will take us outside the scope of our discussion. I've also noticed in the last 10 years that the grammar that our students are using is getting worse. So I'm not sure what you're doing if you're teaching grade school. I'm not sure what you're doing out there, but the ones we're getting in high school, I like to have fun with students. And if I'm doing study hall and maybe say two girls come to the desk and they'll say, one of them will say, me and Heather want to go to the library. And I hope you know what they did wrong there. So typically I'd respond by saying, oh, me and Heather want to go to the library. Oh no, Heather and I want to go to the library. This past year was the first time that I did that, and the response was different. When somebody said, me and John want to go to the library, I'd say, oh, me and John want to go to the library. No, me and John, they'd say. This past year is the first year that I did that, and the student, more than one of them, did not even know what they did wrong, using my subtle method of attempting to get them to see their error, or not so subtle, whatever it was. So I've seen a decline in the grammar proficiency among our students. Why? I guess I'll have to let the grade school people answer that question. I'm not sure. But as I said, we have our work cut out for us. Also in the area of writing, I've noticed, I don't know if I've seen those skills decline, but we really could do something about the writing with our students. We get students in high school who do not know how to write sentences, students who do not know how to write paragraphs, students who don't know how to write good explanatory paragraphs, students who don't know the difference between H-E-R-E and H-E-A-R, or T-H-E-R-E and T-H-E-I-R. I think I'm seeing more of that. So we do have our work cut out for us. If we're going for excellence, if we want excellence, we really do have our work cut out for us. I'm seeing less sensitivity to plagiarism, for example. You all know what plagiarism is, right? That's trying to pass off somebody else's work as if it were yours. I'm seeing less sensitivity to that, and I don't think it comes from dishonesty. I think it comes from ignorance. I really don't think people are trying to be dishonest. I think they're just taking the easy way out and don't realize what they've done.
Well, okay, we've looked at some of the good things. We've looked at some of the work we have cut out for us. Now I'd like to issue some cautions about Mennonite education. And I'd like to say, let's be careful where we educate our teachers. I'm very thankful for what's happening here at Faith Builders. This is a great place to get a teacher education. And I think I can say that even with my little exposure to it. Let's be careful. You know, you send young children off, well, I have to be careful what I say because I'm so old, but I tend to think of people 18 as children. I realize they're not. But you send 18, 19, 20, 22-year-olds off to college, and they tend to believe what the college tells them, you know, and they shouldn't. First of all, in most cases, they're a little bit young to be going off to college. Secondly, they're probably not prepared for what they're going to hear there, and they get all these theories, for example, social science theories, and somehow we need to communicate to young people who are going off to college that theorists are not God, you know. Just because Freud said something, that doesn't make it true. Just because it's in the textbook, that doesn't make it a fact. And of course, we are very loving people, we're very kind people, we're very trusting people, we're sort of naive people, and we're not very skeptical people, except when it comes to money. But you know, other things, what do they say? The only people that can buy from Jews and sell to Scots and make money are Mennonites or something like that. And it's true, and it's not bad. That's not bad. That's good. We've learned to live frugally, haven't we? We have, and it's not bad. But when we apply the same, you know, when we go into education and we see these people there who have got degrees beyond ours, and we see these textbooks, and we get so impressed and we think it's all true. It's not true. Somehow, you have to be able to well, let me tell you a little story. I went to a Christian college, and I was a senior, and I was an old guy. I was 35. And we studied 20th century American literature. And 20th century American literature, if you know anything about Emily Dickinson and all that stuff, isn't really all that nice. When we were all finished with the course, well, in the last week of the course, I put up my hand, I asked the professor, I said, this is a Christian college, right? Right. This is 20th century American literature, right? Yep. I'm going to assume that there were no Christians living in 20th century America. Why? Well, because we just studied 20th century American literature and it was totally devoid of Christian content. I said this in front of the whole class. I was just upset. You know? Why would you say that? I said, well, you just taught all of us would-be teachers 20th century American literature. We're going to go out to schools all over this country and teach 20th century American literature. We're going to teach it in Christian schools, and we will teach it with no Christian content. Well, it took the whole class to defuse all of this. And afterward, sometime later, the professor came to me and he said, the next time I teach that, it will have some Christian content. Now, what was happening? What was happening is, I told Clint I wouldn't make this a sermon. What was happening is that professor had gone to school somewhere and studied 20th century American literature and bought it hook, line, and sinker and fed it to us, and we were buying it hook, line, and sinker. It's not true, folks. It's not true. Please. Don't believe everything people tell you. Well, I'm sorry. Okay. Be careful where we educate our teachers. Don't send them off to college. Or if you do, please have some debriefing type sessions. Another caution. Let's be careful that education does not encroach on the family. Families first. Not school. Families first. Not school. As teachers, we think school's first, right? School's first. No, it's not true. Families first. So let's be careful. One of my commitments is we don't have anything required after school hours. School's from 8:12 to 3:05. You don't have to come earlier. You don't have to stay later. If there's some voluntary things people want to stay for, okay. But let's be careful that we don't encroach. When I was in public school, in high school, I got on the bus at 7 in the morning. I did not get off the bus till 7 in the evening because I was involved with things at school. That wasn't the whole year, but that was a fair amount of it. Don't do that. We shouldn't do that. These are cautions to Anabaptist education. Don't allow your school to become an agency to move students into the surrounding society. Don't allow your school to become an agency to move students into the surrounding society. For example, it's easy for schools to get involved in sports programs. It's easy for schools. For example, our school allows girls to wear culottes for gym class. And now some girls whose parents do not want them to wear culottes go home and say, we have to have culottes for gym class. No, you don't have to. The school says you may if you want to. Don't let the school require things. And I know I'm talking to the administrators now and maybe to the philosophical part of it. But don't require things, even on the grade school level. Be careful about this. Don't say everybody has to bring in a dollar tomorrow. Some families don't like that. Okay? Don't do things that encroach on the family and things that lead your students into the surrounding society. That's sort of its own topic here. Beware the normal evolutionary process of institutions. Once again, I'm feeling that I'm talking more to administrators. Beware the normal evolutionary process of institutions. Beware the normal evolutionary process of institutions. Institutions sort of begin with a dream and a vision and a person or persons that have that, but as time goes on, that sort of gets lost in the wake somehow and we move on into different directions. Well, I'm going to have to start cutting some things out here so you have time to respond. Stay on the cutting edge of quality education. If students use wrong grammar, correct them. If they make mistakes in writing, correct them. If they don't know the magic words like please and thank you and I'm sorry. By the way, that's a good bulletin board project for grade school. Magic words. Please, I'm sorry, thank you. Maybe you don't like the word magic, use another word, whatever. But those are helpful words or something like that. If they don't say thank you, encourage them to do that. Stay on the cutting edge of those things. Be careful that other ideologies do not set the agenda for what you're doing. For example, there are all sorts of inputs that you can get for education. I don't think we should be using, and I'm going to step on some toes here, I don't think we should be using ACE or Becca or Bob Jones materials. Why not? Because they don't support what we're doing. And, you may completely disagree with me. I think you should be supporting faith builders. I think you should be supporting Christian Light, Rod and Staff, whoever you want to. But I think you should be staying as closely as you can within the Anabaptist community. I'm concerned that it's so easy to allow ourselves to buy into competing ideologies, and there's no reason for it, because we ought to be staying on the cutting edge. And I realize I'm talking more to board members and administrators here, but as staff people, I would like to suggest to you, even in grade school, try and get your materials from within the Anabaptist community so that you're always giving an Anabaptist slant to the materials and you're not going out and buying this canned stuff. I don't like that canned stuff. I like the homemade stuff. Okay? I see more and more Mennonite churches are buying canned materials for Bible school. You can buy it all done for you. It comes wrapped up in a box and you just pay the megabucks and you got it. Okay? They send you the posters and the materials. I'd rather see you doing it on your own. So in school, instead of taking the easy way out, I just talked to a man in Mennonite education not very long ago, and he was talking about how much he likes some of this literature, which has its origin in evangelicalism, and he was saying how they really tell you about America and the Revolution and how these people were Christians, all that. I couldn't believe all these things this man was telling me. You know, you can even ask the question, was the American Revolution necessary? Well, of course, all the textbooks will tell you it was, including all the Christian textbooks. But you can ask them, well, what about Canada? They didn't have a revolution, and they got their freedom. You know, there are hard questions that you can ask to the right people at the right time. Well, I'm not sure what else to say. My time's up, and I wanted to give you a few minutes to respond. I would just like to say, integrate the Bible in whatever you're doing. Integrate the Bible. Our children need to hear more about the Bible. They need to know that the Bible has the answers. They need to learn to turn to the Bible for their answers in life. Play games with the Bible. In high school, sometimes we just take a break sometimes from class, and we play a game called Hunt. You know what that is? Okay, we'll take the book of Matthew, and I'll pick somebody. Okay, you come up front, and I'll stand here with my paper, and I'll say, where are you going to start reading? And that person will show me, and I'll write down where they started reading, and then they'll start reading. And all the rest of you out there have to find where they're reading in the book of Matthew. And when you find it, you stand up and you start reading. And when I hear that you're reading what they're reading, I'll know that you found it. Okay? It's just a little Bible game, which you can do even in early grades. Now, of course, they have to learn how to read, and they have to learn. It may not be applicable, say, below fifth grade. But it's a fun game, and it teaches them that the Bible is something you can enjoy. And it gets them into the Bible. It's fascinating to watch a whole class of students that 10 minutes before were almost asleep, and now they're all busily paging through their Bibles. That should be rewarding. It is to me. It should be rewarding to any teacher. So, in closing this session, I would just like to say, teach your students that the Bible has the answer. And as Anabaptist people, we have been known for our diligence in business and agriculture and homemaking, quilts, all this sort of thing. And we can apply that same industry to education, because you have something to offer. You have something to offer your own people, and every student that you teach is a person who can go out and whatever they're going to do in the world and make a real difference, because you have something to offer. Questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Speak up just a little bit. Fans noise a little bit.
You said that you prefer that our schools use
Anabaptist
because most people don't have a choice.
Well, everything I have to say, of course, is going to be very general. If you don't have a choice, then you work with what you have. I'm not telling you to please come home and say, no, give your school board a bad time to do something I said. Don't do that. That's inappropriate. But as it applies, I think you should be attempting to use materials that you generate yourself, and materials from that. I feel very strong in that. Do you have a follow-up?
Well, the school that I'm teaching for uses, for instance, for the English, back. And I was just taking one of the literature books for the high school that I was teaching. And I really appreciate this book, because I really took some of those classes and stuff, and they got pretty literature. And I really like some of the stuff I've done. But one of the very first sections had to do with American Revolution, and things like that. And I'm wondering, you know, how do I approach that from a true Christian standpoint? Because I don't necessarily know what the Bible is left. You know, should I, when you're teaching this subject, when I get to that session, should I put it in an Anabaptist or Mennonite school? Should I tell them at the very beginning of the class, you know, we don't necessarily believe there would be a Savior, but this is our subject, our study.
Yeah, see, you're voicing the very dilemma that I'm trying to avoid. And that's the dilemma that I don't like to see. I don't like to see an impressionable student looking at that, telling them one thing, to do it not telling something different. I think that's a mixed message that's confused. On the other hand, you can use it as an opportunity to to say you have to be discerning and discriminating when you read anything. And this is the textbook. It's written from the perspective of people who think war is okay. And so you have a positive part of the textbook is it doesn't take Christian materials, and it probably doesn't have Abraham, Pound, or Raven, and all that stuff in there. And so you don't have to, I'm not necessarily opposed to Pound, or Raven, but I'm not sure if necessary here. So you have some pluses of what you're doing, but also some negatives. And that's what I'd like to say. I would like to see the Anabaptist community, and maybe you people are the foundation for it, come up with an Anabaptist approach to education. And a curriculum that's calculated to do that and to produce that. Why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we be on the cutting edge of what's happening? We have historically, we opposed slavery before the country even knew about it. We knew that there was a problem. You know, we opposed smoking a long time before there were no smoking signs all over the place. Right? So why don't we get on the cutting edge of education and do it right? So the question over here. Frank. There's a question there.
You
have to
debate Civil War. They have their view of the Christian men, the Anabaptists, heroes in the Anabaptist faith, but that in that same time.
Okay.
Yes, no. Just a very practical question. What curriculum would you use?
The curriculum has changed. The curriculum has changed very little since I've been at the school. So I'm passing the buck here, which administrators are not supposed to do. Terry Hill Mennonite High School uses almost all secular materials. HBJ, whoever we can buy it from. And my personal opinion is that I prefer that over the Christian stuff. Right now we're struggling with buying new literature books, and we're looking at the type of thing that he's talking about here. And I would prefer to use a secular literature book and bring in what I want to bring in, rather than take a Christian literature book and have to write disclaimers to the things that I don't agree with. And the word Christian there is in quotes, by the way. Okay, other comments or questions? Yes, ma'am.
Is that easier than, like, you're saying, they basically teach out secular books? Is it easier to teach out a secular book and explain why that is wrong rather than have a Christian book and explain why that is okay, like, say, where people are wrong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, I'm willing to hear someone say they disagree. But even if we want to argue about this, the point I'm trying to make is that we ought to be generating the stuff we want our students to know. We do it in business. We do it in farming. You know, New Holland Baylor timing mechanism was invented a few miles from our school a long time ago. And the man got very wealthy. You know? Now, why can't we apply that same ingenuity to education? No matter who's on and...
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.